Today we're having an interview with Professor Jerry White. Today is Thursday, the 21st of November. It's about 1 p.m. in the afternoon. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Good afternoon.
Jerry, would you please give us your full name?
John Gerard White.
Were you named after any member of your family?
I was named in spite of a member of my family. My grandmother wanted me to be called Jeremiah. My mother said no. So they named me Gerard instead.
Where and when were you born?
I was born in Brooklyn at Victor Memorial Hospital in Bay Ridge on the 10th of June in 1932.
Okay. Do you have any siblings, any brothers or sisters?
Nope. I'm a fils unique.
And your parents, what were your mother and father's name, and what did your father do?
My mother's name was Eleanor. My father's name was Bernard. My father and mother separated when I was very young, so I don't have a great deal of influence from him. My mother eventually became a telephone operator.
Mm-hmm. And moving on to early childhood, where did you live as a child and as an adolescent?
I lived in Bay Ridge, but then when my mother and father separated, I went to boarding school up in Sullivan County at St. Joseph's Boarding School, which was run by the Dominican nuns from Amityville. Mm. It's no longer there. I'm told it's now a development of some kind. Mm-hmm. It was between Monticello and Forestburg. Mm-hmm. I was there until 1945. I graduated when I had just turned 12. I'd done the 7th and 8th grades.
Yeah, that's part of the next question. The grade school then was part of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But before you went there, you went to a school in Brooklyn?
I was at St. Patrick's School in Brooklyn only for about 6 months. Before I went in when I was 5 and a half.
Mm-hmm. And high school?
I went to LaSalle Academy down on 2nd Street.
On 2nd Avenue?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right next to all those great Jewish theaters and all that marvelous food.
Yes. Yeah. And did you have any early work experience while at LaSalle? Did you work in Christie's or any of the stores?
No, I did. My mother actually said to me, study.
Oh.
And so my experience,
so you did.
My experience in high school was very fun because I not only studied, but I was able to, I got, as a kid, if you know that part of New York, it's a short walk over to Lafayette Street. I used to do a lot of visiting there for the bookshops. I got to love the secondhand bookshops. That was one of my great favorite pastimes, to go up and down the street. And couldn't buy anything, but we'd spend a lot of time reading. Yeah.
One of my first students, York Luisi, was right from that area.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And moving on, from high school, where did you go to college, undergraduate?
I went to a small college in North Carolina, just outside Charlotte, where my paternal grandmother lived, a place called Belmont Abbey College.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I had relatives on my father's side who had gone there before me.
We eventually sent a man from here to go to Belmont Abbey.
We had a man who came from Belmont Abbey who's here. Our team, yeah.
Right. But there was another guy who went down and became president there for a short time.
Oh, yeah. Joe Brosnan.
Joe Brosnan.
Yeah, yeah. And very, he called me. We chatted about that. And what's even more fascinating is, unfortunately, Joe's tenure there was a bit unfortunate. Short life is putting. But the man who succeeded him is Bob Preston, who was a classmate of mine.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting. And then moving on from undergraduate to graduate, was that a direct move? Or
No. When I graduated from Belmont in 1953, I went into the Navy, I was in the Navy for a little over 5 years. That was, if you will recall, that's when we had no choice, the draft.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go into the Army. And I hadn't taken the precaution of preparing for some kind of application for Officer Candidate School in the last year of my senior year. So what I did was I enlisted in the Navy, and for about a year I served as a hospital corpsman. I was in Philadelphia, and then later at Bethesda, and then I was sent to Newport to the Officer Candidate School, and I got a commission, and I flew for the next 3 and a half years. I was stationed in Jacksonville and Pensacola in San Diego.
You were actually a pilot for them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I went out to sea. I was on the Lexington for a tour. I was in Westpac. Mm-hmm. And then I wound up the last 6 or 8 months in Whidbey Island, which is north of Seattle.
Mm-hmm. As long as I've known you, I've never known that part of your story. So
yeah, I can tell you some hairy tales about landing on carriers, if you like.
Not at the moment.
No.
Then let's go on to graduate school.
One of the nice things about the Navy, besides the opportunity to fly and to get around the Pacific, was that when you go to sea as a pilot, you have a series of options. One is you're going to fly all the time. When you're not flying, you may stand duty. And then you have a third thing. You can join the longest running crap game in the fleet and lose your money, or you can read, and I preferred the second, and I got lots and lots of reading done. And so when I left the Navy, I was released in November of 1958. I applied to Fordham Graduate School, but what I did was I didn't enter Fordham until the summer. I think it was late June or July of 1959, and I spent the time from November to June going to the opera and not doing a damn thing except living on what monies I had saved, and then I even was able to con the state of New York to pay me unemployment. Passed myself off as something called an historic research specialist, for which there are not very many opportunities. So I collected a check every week from New York until I went to graduate school. And then I went into Fordham, and I was at Fordham from 58 to 63.
Ah. And when did you first do some teaching?
At Fordham.
I did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had... the first year I was at Fordham, one of the things I had, of course, was the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. Which paid for all kinds of things. The first year I worked at night in a bank and took classes in the daytime, or actually the graduate classes were usually at 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the afternoon. But then I got a graduate assistant. That would have been in 60, and I was a graduate assistant. It turned out in the first one I had, I was working for Professor Jeremiah O'Sullivan, who was effectively my mentor, and I did the class was divided into small groups. After two lectures, there were small groups of 20 kids, and I handled those. And then Professor O'Sullivan got very sick, and I guess it was in 61, 62, and I took over all of his classes while he was, he had a major operation. Took over all his college classes, not his, mm-hmm. of course, not his graduate classes. So I did the medieval history, mm-hmm. and then I also had an opportunity to work with Professor Albert Lumi, who was a Jesuit, and I was his assistant correcting papers. And then I got a chance also to handle his discussion
Small
groups.
Places, yeah.
And then there was one semester when I was one half with another guy of the history faculty at the College of Pharmacy at Fordham. Mm-hmm. I taught modern, and I taught early modern. This other guy taught late modern. And I also taught down at the business school at Fordham in the summertime.
Lincoln Center?
Yeah. No, this was before Lincoln Center. This was down at... They had a place down right by City Hall on Chamber Street. E. Paul Levac, who was the chairman of the history department at Fordham, was an extraordinarily hands-on type of person for the people who worked for him. He would always see to it. He would get us. I actually also, thanks to him, worked as a reference librarian the last summer I was at Fordham. At night, they ran out of regular reference librarians and said, "You can go do that," and they paid me for it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Did you take courses through this whole time? You must have a very long record.
I took lots and lots of classes. And, mm-hmm.
And eventually you got a master's degree from
degree, and I did everything except the doctorate for my, everything but the thesis for my doctorate, yeah.
Okay. And then coming to Marist, what was the contact?
It was very interesting. I was looking for a job in 63, and one of the professors at the Fordham who was a medievalist, Professor Joseph O'Callaghan, was at the medieval academy meeting in the spring, I think it was in April of 1963. In Boston, and he ran into Roscoe.
Oh.
They sat next to each other. And Roscoe asked him if he knew anybody who could teach medieval and early modern European history, and Joe said, yeah. And so Roscoe gave him his name, and I got in touch with Roscoe, and I came up here, I guess it was in June, right after the semester ended, because I remember it was it was Sheehan that had just been completed.
That was the first of the dormitory.
First, no, then it was Leo. I always get those two confused.
Yeah,
I still
do. Sheehan is a smaller one.
Yeah, but the one that had just been completed, the second one, we had our first meeting in the sort of lounge there.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I came in the summer of 63.
Uh-huh. And what do you recall of those times? What, did you do four courses each semester?
Well, remember we had two credit courses then. Not the three. That was still, we were still doing two, but we wound up doing. I wound up doing four courses a semester. Did medieval, and we had the introductory course, which was remember everybody had. We had two Europeans, the first freshman year, and then two American, and then we had. I also taught a course on. The history of monasticism, and I was also doing diplomatic history. Those were the first ones. And I was then put on the library committee with Adrian running the show. Milton had been my predecessor, Milton Teichman, and I managed to put large size 12 in mouth with Adrian when I said to him, I think the first day in my brashness, I said, wouldn't it be a good idea to put this whole place on the Library of Congress system? Well, 45 minutes later, when Adrian got finished lecturing me on the problem of that, I decided never again to ask any questions.
Just about everybody who comes through here at that time. Bob Lewis was one. Mm-hmm. I think Ed O'Keefe or Peter O'Keefe all have library traditions. They going to Adrian's meetings in the library, and
then I was also on something, and I was also on another committee called the Student Affairs Committee, which was supposed to be an advisory committee to Paul Stokes. Now you can imagine how advisory we were on that one.
The sheriff.
I remember being called into a meeting. There was some kid. I have the vaguest notion who he is now, but there was some kid who had obviously incurred the.
Wrath
of Paul, and Paul was just livid, and he said, this is what he's done, this is what you'll do, and I'll leave the room and you do it, and he threw the kid out. I was a kind of, I'd be very frank with you, my sensitivities were hurt on that one. I thought he was acting at best like a dictator, but I wasn't again about to take him on either.
Only because he wore came to this class without socks or some.
I don't know what the reason it was. I have no idea what this child did, but he obviously had done something very, very bad for Paul.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What other personal experiences did you have? These are committee meetings that we're talking about now. You had advisement to students?
We had advisements. Remember, we were all in Donnelly, and what was so interesting about the first years in Donnelly, we had the history department was in one of those
cubicles.
The cubicles, remember? And we
within
had one room.
Within a room, yeah.
We had the room, we had a cubicle, and we all were together. We knew it. Right? Roscoe had the desk of prominence by the window. The rest of us were in these things. And I met a good number of students. I got to know them much better because we were still, remember, we were smaller then.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great deal of closeness, camaraderie that was nice. And of course, Eddie Cashin was in our department, and he had just been made vice president. In fact, I'll always remember he was kind of blushing about that, and I called him. I remember I went up to him, and I said, you're now the vice preces. And he says, don't call me that, don't say that. And he got very uptight about it. But, yeah. we thought we might have some kind of in with yeah. the thing.
And the new administration,
yeah.
as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also remember, again, since it was Linus showing up, and I never forget, it's one thing I used to, as you remember, I used to smoke a pipe. Uh-huh. In fact, there's a yearbook picture of that. And we used to smoke amphora, was the tobacco I smoked. And Linus came over, and it was a big can of tobacco on the shelf above yeah. my desk. And he said, even here we become classical.
You know? Yes. There was names I wanted to bring up. You know, I'm skipping a little bit here, but could you just, you know, comment on your experience with Roscoe and Lou Zuccarello, Peter O'Keefe, Ed
all
Cash,
of those guys,
Dan Kirk. You know,
Roscoe
what?
Hired me. Roscoe was simply an extraordinary individual. I find it very hard to define him. He was an individual. When I first got to talking to him about history, I became a bit disconcerted. But the fact that he had a way of sort of shuffling off the exactness of dates, that didn't seem to bother him, which did, as a young whippersnapper, I found that disturbing. But I think I came to appreciate his breath, and there was a kind of spontaneity to the man that I found most refreshing eventually. There was a marvelous warmth about him, and as the years developed, even though we had many disagreements, major disagreements on things, we developed a sense of rapport. He liked the Dallas Cowboys, I liked the Giants. That was one great problem between the two of us. He was a character, and
from his dress to
from
his
walk,
dress
to his walk
to his
comments
speech.
To his speeches yeah. and to the fact. In fact, it was very interesting. Just as an aside, I was talking to George Summer, who was here last Thursday for that the summer lecture.
Yeah.
He stopped in, and I told him one of the things that I remembered was George sitting in faculty meetings over in Donnelly
yeah.
In the big round hall, and Roscoe getting up to propose some things in English. And George's look was always, you know, what the hell is going on here? But and
probably a point of order. Was...
Yeah, it was.
Was raised.
I mean, it was. I think he said something to me. He says Roscoe was still trying to prove that the author of the Gilgamesh was a woman or something. I don't know what it was, but Roscoe was really a splendid figure. Gave the, I don't know if you remember it or not, I gave the faculty farewell to him over in Lowell Thomas. And if I may, I quoted in that a line from Einhard's Life of Charlemagne. The line is, describing Charlemagne, he said he was eloquentia copiosa et exuberans, meaning that he spoke eloquently, but he was full of enthusiasm, and he spoke a lot. he had always had an opinion on something. Yeah, yeah. But I would say, in our first years, there was the problem of as I say, a young whippersnapper and myself and he. But in the last years, when Fontaine was in the library spot, we got very close, and I really missed him.
Okay, can you move on a little bit? How about Lou? Was Lou here yet?
Lou didn't come until afterwards. Lou came. It was
Professor Lou Zuccarello.
Lou Zuccarello. Yeah, Lou came about 4 or 5 years after I came. I can't remember what his dates were. Yeah, Vinny came before Lou. Vinny Toscano was here, because I remember he came in when I was chairman after '65, Lou came, and he was with us because the history and the political science and the criminal justice and all those people were all in the same bailiwick, yes. I distinctly remember, what I remember most about Lou was that eventually when I was no longer chairman, George Score followed me. He came with me the same time. He's now retired from college in New Jersey. And Lou succeeded. And I remember George arranged somehow or other to get us over to St. Peter's when the brothers evacuated that place. Yeah. And so we had that over there. I remember Lou particularly downstairs in the first office off to the right as the area in establishing a kind of identity for us. And then I also remember when we moved, I remember very kindly Lou's thing, when we moved from St. Peter's over to Fontaine, he got me. We had the problem.
A window?
We had the problem of how we were going to fit into that, and then some of the people were sharing offices, and he put me in that little small room. When you came up to the top floor, if you remember, you came up and you made a left turn, and there was that small room.
Yes.
And he said, "Jerry, I put you in here because you have lots of contacts with students. You want to have privacy." And this was the only room I could get. And I looked at him and I said, "I'm not going to stay unless I can pick up WQXR on my radio." And I could. I ran an antenna up to the roof and I got it. And so I said, "Well, I'll stay." And just on that same point, when he left as chairman, when he became dean, I believe, then Kevin Donahue became chairman. And Don Drennan left. And Don had the corner office, and so I went into to Kevin, and I said to him, "I have rank in this place now. I want that corner office," and so I moved in there and got it. But going back to Lou, I remember him very much for that. And there's Lou is a unique member of the faculty. He brought a great sense of balance and order. I've always thought Lou's Lou's the person you go to if you want some kind of good, balanced response to things. There's a marvelous...
very well organized, and goes from A to Z with that.
Yeah, but there's also just the way he looks at things, the balance of things. He's not given quite to the hyperbole, which I would associate with myself.
I would like you to comment, because I know there was some kind of relationship, I didn't quite understand it, with Dan Kirk.
Danny and I were very close because we played racquetball together. Uh-huh. And I really thought the world of him. In fact, I still, I just found out yesterday that his sister died.
What's his name?
Mo told me about that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But no, Danny and I were close in from the racquetball, and then I just got to know him as just a splendidly warm human being. Right. He was, Gus, I'm sure you remember this. There was from the day I got here, there was always that marvelous